where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Well, happy Saturday to everybody out there. Good morning. My name is Paul Metters, and I'm the host of the Central Valley Sports Report here on 1430 ESPN. Thank you guys so much for tuning in this morning. I'm here live at First String Sports. This is definitely the place to be. Hey, the weather out there, man, isn't it gorgeous? I know next week, if you look at your app, obviously, there's gonna be some rain going on tomorrow morning or Monday morning. They're like, come on, give us a little bit of break. But today is absolutely gorgeous. Come on down here to First String Sports. There's already people that have come in and see they're getting their Letterman's jackets fixed up. Baseball bats are being purchased. First String Sports, they've been one of my sponsors from day one. Really appreciate them. So come on down here. Check it out. Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors. And also at 1430 ESPN. 2 hours of pure high school sports talk here on the Central Valley Sports Report. Well, I don't know about pure high school sports. I'm going to talk about a little bit about college basketball. Of course, this is March Madness. I know the 1430 ESPN has carried games on Thursday and Friday. That was a lot of fun. I was able to join Gabe Camarillo on a home field advantage. He set up his show at Slater's 50-50 there at Fashion Fair Mall, and that was a lot of fun. We're just chatting it up for about an hour, and the games are going on. So, 1430 has done a great job covering college basketball, March Madness. And I actually wasn't – we didn't have a show last week, and I got to be honest. I missed you guys. I missed talking. I missed talking about high school sports. And it was a huge weekend with the state playoffs that went on, going to one arena there in Sacramento. I got something planned every year with my guys. Speaking of March Madness, I go to Las Vegas with some dudes every year. We've done it for 7 years straight. Actually, they've done it for 9, but I've done it with them for 7 years. And go to Las Vegas, check out the Mountain West tournament for a little bit, and just hang out, have a good time. We're not crazy guys at all. We're mostly around 50 years old, so we take it easy, but we're college basketball junkies, and so we like to sit at sports book, place a few sensible bets, and watch the games and go to Mountain West tournament games. So I was able to go there. My plane landed. It was a little bit delayed. I took the Allegiant flight from Fresno to Vegas, landed at 1:30 in the morning on Friday, and watched basketball. And we hung out at Mandalay Bay. And then we weren't quite sure what to do on Saturday. You know, the championship game was at 3 o'clock, and decided, we'll just hang out. Let's not go watch that game. So we decided to leave Saturday night kind of late. But what was going on in Henderson, Nevada was the Big West Championship game. So we decided to go check that out. Well, the main reason why is because Cole Anderson, Clovis West grad, one of the greatest shooters of all time in the Central Section, his UC Santa Barbara team was playing in the championship game, Big West Championship game, against Cal State Fullerton, who also had a Clovis West grad, Grayson Carper, who has a great story. So Grayson Carper, Cal State Fullerton, Cole Anderson, UCSB, and it was at Dollar Loan Arena there in Henderson, Nevada. And we're like, let's go check it out. We'll drive home later that night. And it was a great experience. That was probably my favorite part of the trip. The parking was easy. It was like going to a high school game, right? You just park right there. You got about a 200-foot walk to the front. It was only $30 to get in. And it was a nice arena. It was intimate. It was fairly new. Got to watch Cole Anderson win. You know, obviously they played yesterday and lost to Baylor. Cole had 4 points in that game. Cole Anderson had 12 points in the championship game. Got to watch him celebrate, hang out with Nick Anderson, who's a friend of the show, friend of 1430 ESPN. So that was a great experience. So that was a lot of fun. So that was the short version, I guess, of why I was absent last week. But I sure missed you guys. I missed talking about high school sports. And the state championship games at Golden One Arena were awesome. We're going to be talking later with Gabe Camarillo around 11:30. He was able to go check out those games. Congrats. I know it's been a full week and talked about a lot. We tweeted about it, but congrats to the Central girls for winning the D2 state championship game. What a story that is. Talia Maxwell was one of the great games in state championship history, right? 24 points, 24 rebounds. Are you kidding me? A state record in a championship game, 24 rebounds. Congrats to the Central girls. You know, they went 5-5 in league, placed in D2. They actually lost in the D1 playoffs, in our Central Section playoffs, to Buchanan. But those girls, they caught fire at the right time, and what a ride for them. And then San Joaquin Memorial boys, what another great story. D2 state champs, beat Pacifica Christian. We're going to be talking with Coach Brad Rosnowski for about, I don't know, 12 minutes after this break here. They caught fire at the right time. I mean, those boys were primed and ready to make a run of the state playoffs. Congrats to San Joaquin Memorial. Again, we're talking with Coach Roz after the break. St. Joseph, great run they had to the Open Championship. Fell to Harvard Westlake. St. Joe's, man, really, really good program. They are definitely not going away for a while. And then the Sierra boys on Friday at 12 o'clock lost in their state championship game. But congrats to Coach Watt on that great run. Logan Kilbert, incredible season. He's only a junior, going to be a senior next year, has a chance to break the all-time Central Section scoring record. Yes, all-time Central Section scoring record, averaged about 30 points a game this season. So just, lots of action last week. I mentioned that Coach Roz is coming on after the break. At 10:30, around 10:30, a little after 10:30, Buchanan baseball coach Brad Fonce is coming on the show. So it's the Saturday of Brad's here. Brad Fonce has done an incredible job taking over for Tom Donald. Buchanan won a Central Section championship a couple years ago. Always love talking with Brad, coming here live to First String Sports. Talking about the season, you know, I mentioned the weather out there and the rain that's caused a lot of havoc in baseball season. You know, a lot of baseball teams in high school have only played about 6 or 7 games. Tournaments have been rained out. Games at the coast have been rained out. And league is starting next week for a lot of schools. So only those 6 or 7 or, you know, maybe even 8 games been played in high school baseball. But league is starting up quick. So, yeah, the rain has really wreaked some havoc here in the Central Section. So talking with Brad about lots of cool things. He played pro ball for a while. He's coached at Fresno State. So he has a great perspective on baseball. Looking forward to talking with him. And then our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week, we got Cam Schneider, Buller baseball. So this guy's a Fresno State baseball commit, 4-year varsity dude. He's been the CMAC Player of the Year for 2 years running. He pitched a complete game shutout on Tuesday. I got to watch him throw against Bakersfield Christian. Gave up, I think, 5 hits in that one. Complete game, like I said. And yesterday, Bullard beat Clovis North 11-1. He had a couple hits and RBI in that one. So looking forward to talk to Cam. Wanted him on the show last year. Wasn't able to work out, but I knew he had his senior year waiting. So he's the complete package, man. Fresno State is going to get a good one. Actually played basketball as a freshman. He's on varsity as a freshman and decided just to concentrate purely on baseball. I think he made a good choice on that one, but I'm sure Coach Tim Amundson tried to recruit him to get him back to play basketball. But, yeah, Cam Snyder, looking forward to talking to him. A couple of news and notes before we take a break here. You know, it's never too early to talk about football, and, you know, football is always a hot topic. Thinking about Brett Favre, that's dominating the airwaves right now if you listen to national radio. But, you know, Deegan Rose, freshman at Clovis High, he had a great season last year. Thrown to the Wolves, remember that first game against Pauley. But he threw 26 touchdowns last year. He already received his first Division I offer as a freshman. Football season's over, but he got his first D1 offer from Pitt. Yeah, when I saw that on Twitter, I'm like, well, that's cool. We knew this guy was going to be a D1 football player, but from Pitt, right? That caught me off by surprise a little bit. I think maybe a West Coast school would offer them first, but no, Pitt. I know he would love to get that D1 offer from Fresno State. I'm sure it's going to be coming. But, yeah, congrats to Deegan Rose. And then something else popped up. This is kind of a little bit of a basketball wrap-up episode as well. But Coach Craig Campbell, the Clovis West girls basketball coach, they won their 11th straight Central Section title, made it to the NorCal Open Championship, lost to Mitty. He was just named as one of the 100 most impactful people in women's college basketball. Now, let me read that again. 100 of the most impactful people in women's college basketball. college, right? And this is Craig Campbell, the coach at Clovis West in high school. And I read the bio and why they wrote that up. He said, well, Craig Campbell, he's sent so many girls to the D1 level. He is always willing and open to talk about the drills that he runs, the shooting drills. He's an open book. He has great relationships with college coaches. When I've talked to Craig about him being able to send up girls to the college level, he's so proud of that. And I think it's over $1 million, could be wrong on this, but over $1 million in scholarships that he has helped facilitate for his girls in his basketball career. What an honor. Congrats to Coach Craig Campbell. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to be talking with Coach Brad Rosnowski, D2 state championship. They are the champions of D2. San Joaquin Memorial defeated Pacifica Christian. Talking to Coach Roz coming up after the break on 1430 ESPN.
Listen to the San Francisco Giants on locally owned 1430 ESPN. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Thank you guys for joining us, 1430 ESPN. Here is Paul Metters, 1430 ESPN. It is definitely March Madness, man. This is my favorite month in the sports season for sure. High school basketball wrapped up. You know, we mentioned March Madness, spring training, Major League Baseball, high school baseball and softball are in full swing. Bringing on Coach Brad Rosnowski, state champion, Division II. Mentioned they defeated Pacifica Christian 58-47. Coach Roz, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. March Madness, are you checking it out right now? What's going on?
Yeah, Paul, that sounds so good, the state champion thing. But, yeah, like you have a tradition going out of town with your friends and I think the conference Mountain West tournament. I've got a little tradition. I'm helping Shaver right now with I'm an 87 grad at Memorial. There's about 8 of us up here, all graduated. We do it every year. We come up here. My good friend Steve Renna has a house up here. And we come up here, and all we do is watch games. We cook a little bit. We'll bring food in, have a cold beverage or two. And it's just great, great times with good friends of mine here. So we're watching a lot of hoops, Paul.
Oh, that's amazing. And you're right. Like the community aspect of watching games just enhances the experience. I go home yesterday after work and I'm watching games. My daughter's there, which is awesome, and I loved it watching games with her. But it's like you want to root with your guys, right? You want to strategize. You can say, what is this guy doing? What is this coach doing? And talking about that stuff. So that's always a lot of fun. But, you mentioned the D2 champs and just how sweet that sounds. But, has it really sunk in? Have there been some moments this week where it's just kind of caught you like, wait a second, did that happen? Oh. Yeah, we are state champs. I mean, there have been some moments throughout the week that's happened to you.
Yeah, I think the one moment really, Paul, that was kind of rang a bell on me was the what the school did for us. They put a little ceremony on for us. Mayor Dyer came and did a proclamation for us, and that I think when that happened, they literally rolled out the red carpet for us, and it was about a 30 to 40 minute ceremony, and I'm so happy the school did that. They just honored these kids in the way they should be honored. So that's when everything happened so quick. Saturday we drove home and done a few interviews and stuff, but I think Thursday sitting in that gym with those kids, they had their jerseys on, and I think that's really when it kind of hit that we are state champs.
And is it true that Mayor Jerry Dyer declared March 16th as San Joaquin Memorial Day? Is that true?
He did. It was great. The boys loved that. And, he shared a couple stories of him being a basketball player back in the late 70s that I think our school and administration and our boys really enjoyed. So he's such a great speaker, and he took time out of his day to honor us.
Yeah, you mentioned how quick the whole experience, I'm sure, just flew by. And, the game, you're on my show a couple weeks ago, and mentioned how you hardly have any time to prepare. You do the best you can, and, the games happen really quick. But – like on the drive home, what was that like? I remember 2017 when I covered the Clovis West girls when they won the open division. Actually drove home. My in-laws live in Sacramento area, so our whole family was there. My wife was driving home. She picked me up from the arena. We drove to Fresno home that night, and I was just tweeting stuff out and texting. And obviously, I'm just a fan, right? And I was working for the paper at that time, but. For you, driving home, right? Who'd you drive home? Were you driving with some players, your family? You're just riding high. What was the discussion like?
Yeah, we had a lot of the kids we were talking about. We went up Friday, obviously, stayed the night Friday, and we talked about getting rooms Saturday night, but we just kind of played it by ear. You know, if we would have had a tough loss, probably didn't want to stay. So we ended up not getting rooms. I'd say, Paul, probably 60, 70% of the kids went home with their families, which the school was totally fine with. So I had a car. I had about five kids in there, and it was just, we turned the music off. We just talked. And funny story, Paul, I was talking to my wife, and then as I'm talking to her, you buzzed in. And so on my Bluetooth, it shows Paul Metters. And the kids, I talked to my wife, and I ended up calling you back. And, Paul, you're a legend amongst our kids. I mean, they were like, Coach, you got to call Paul Metters back. So we ended up calling you back. So that was kind of a fun little detail of a ride home. But it was a quick ride home just because we were on cloud nine.
Well, and again, I mentioned that I wasn't able to be there, and I texted you. I said, "Oh, I wanted to share that experience with you guys and be there." But I mean, I was with you guys in spirit for sure. But have you guys started to design the ring? I know how important that is for kids. They love the ring. They love the being a part of designing, or even the shirt, because I'm sure you're getting shirts as well. But has the designing started for the ring yet?
Absolutely, we have it. We're in the kind of the closing stages. Monday after school, they get sized, which we're really excited about. You know, it takes about 8 weeks. Graduate Services do a great job over there. They do a lot of the Valley rings for all the local teams. So I'm really trying to get these rings and do a little ring ceremony before graduation, which is May 20th. So, yes, I did the design. My wife helped me, and my son-in-law Vince helped me, and now I'm going to show the kids. And, yeah, it's a pretty special-looking ring, and they're going to get sized on Monday, which is always an exciting time.
Oh, that's great. I'm sure they're going to love seeing that mock-up. So when you hoisted the state championship plaque and you guys were out there, I'm sure that was just an exhilarating feeling. And then I saw the press conference and listened to that. That was really neat. But is there another moment, a special moment for you and your team? Maybe you got, a special message. You mentioned Jerry Dyer, obviously, came in and, they rolled out the red carpet for you, the school did. But is there another moment that was, just super cool that just enhanced the experience?
I'll tell you what, Paul. Looking back, we had a conversation in our locker room after we lost to St. Joe's. And it's probably not the answer you were looking for. But we were really emotionally upset. We really thought we had a chance to win that game. And I told the kids, listen, we're going to the state playoffs. And I tell you right now, maybe we get lucky and get a pretty good seed. I don't know if we're going to be a low D1 or maybe a higher D2. It's tough to say nowadays with the state. But my message to them was, we're a hot team right now. I know we lost. We lost to a top 10 team in the state. And my message to them was, let's go. Let's take a week, to get ready. And sure enough, they kind of sunk into them. We had a great week of practice. So I think the message, and they were, after that, the emotions kind of went away. And then they were talking. We had a good ride home from St. Joseph's. And I think that loss did us some good. I think we realized, hey, we can play with really good teams.
You guys were the sixth seed in D2, and obviously that loss to St. Joe's, like you mentioned, fired you guys up. Now, just to frame it a little bit from my perspective as well, so you guys lost to St. Joe's at their place by two in the Central Section Tournament. You guys were the sixth seed in our division, right, in our section?
Yeah.
Six.
Which,
yeah,
which,
so six in both.
Which is kind of, I think people, yeah, but you know what? We thought we'd get the five, so, it is what it is. It worked out for the best. And anyways, yeah, we were the sixth seed in our own.
Yeah, so sixth seed in D2, and you guys lost that close one to St. Joe's. And you mentioned St. Joe's a top 10. Well, you could argue top two, right? Because they made it to the as far as you can go, and lost to Harvard Westlake. So hey, you went toe to toe with one of the top teams, if not, the top two teams in the whole entire state. So you guys were definitely primed and ready. I want to ask you too, Brad, about the facility and about playing at Golden One, and it's an NBA court, right? So it's a little bit longer. It's got the big feel to it. What was it like coaching there on that court? And did the players say anything like, "Coach, man, this is pretty darn awesome. The floor is in perfect condition. There's no dead spots or anything like that." Was there anything about that?
Well, I have to tell you, Paul, it started by us driving into the facility. We had three vehicles with players in it, and they literally took the driver's license of each coach, and they just scanned it to make sure that we were all good. They put a scanner underneath our car to make sure we weren't bringing anything. It's crazy. I've never seen anything like that. So it was from that moment on, we parked in this closed facility. All that was in there were vans or buses for, the other teams. So then we walk in, they greet us, we all walk through a scanner, and then we go sit down. And, I mean, from the moment we sat down, Paul, they had two people that were kind of our liaisons that kind of took us to and from, wanted to know we want to go to the locker room. We need water. They get it. We go in the locker room. We're in an NBA locker room. It was amazing. I mean, there's a clock on there that TV, we could watch the game ahead, see how much time was left. And then from the moment we got on the court, I mean, these kids were in awe. And I think, Paul, to be honest with you, to answer your question, I think we were in awe a little bit because we did not play well in that first half. We only scored 23 points. We were timid. We weren't taking good shots. We were guarding okay to keep us close. But that, I think all that stuff, I think, Paul, really affected us. I thought maybe playing in Save Mart Center against Sierra Canyon would have prepared us a little bit. But obviously, second half, we were a little more looser.
Yeah, and you know, we haven't really talked about the game that much. We got a few more minutes with you, Coach Roz. But, you know, who clutched? Obviously, Mike Davis Jr., and he was on the show, too, with you a couple weeks ago. He's just – he turned into beast mode for sure. But you got a lot of contributions from all the guys, right?
We did. And our people asked me what we said at halftime. We just said this for the kids to loosen up. It really wasn't drawing anything up on the board. Our primary goal was still to get Mike the ball. Amari hit a big three. Dre Davis hit a huge three to end the third quarter. And A. Potts hit some big shots. And obviously, Gerald Perry was just huge defensively guarding Parker Strauss, which is a D1 kid going to Northwestern. So to answer your question, Gabe, I think we kind of fit the role of our mode of the whole season where, you know, Amari had 25 one game. Mike only had 8. Vice versa the next game. So it was kind of a different guy all year, just like it was Saturday night.
No, it was. And, you know, San Joaquin Memorial obviously has great pedigree. You know, story program, Poindexters, Brooke and Robin Lopez, Jalen Green, but it's the first state title for the school. You mentioned the great ceremony and rolling out the red carpet, but, you know, are you able to quantify it, what it means to the community, what it means to San Joaquin Memorial to finally have a state championship?
And I made sure I made that message to our student body, you know, Thursday, that this championship really is for our community. It really is. I mean, obviously, we're going to recognize these 13 boys and our staff, but, you know, I wanted them all to enjoy it. We had a great student section all year, and it really is for our community. Quincy Poindexter FaceTimed us in the locker room after the game, which he was in tears. He had so much emotion. You know, Jalen sent me a video that I'm going to put on our Twitter here today. So it's really for everybody. You know, those guys, I get asked a lot, all those NBA guys, and they didn't win one. But you know what? Back in the day, Division IV, which we played in before, competitive equity, was the best division in the state. So, you know, this is for all those guys. This is for our community and our student body. So it's really for everybody.
I know. And, again, that's brought up a lot, to be honest, right? The Brooke and Robin never won one, and Jalen. But, you know, different times, and I totally get it. And people forget, right? You just think you got three NBA guys on a team talking about Lopez and Quincy, but – D4, they had NBA guys in that division as well. In D4, it was different with private schools. But anyway,
they
Brad,
they lost Paul real quick. They lost to Drew Holiday one year, and they lost to James Harden.
I've heard of those guys. Yeah, decent
and then
players.
And our 2008 team when Pat Guile was the coach, they went to a SoCal regional too and lost. So we've had some good teams, and we just kind of finally got over the hump.
Yeah, you did, and it was a great experience, man. I'm so happy for you guys. Brad, I know it's baseball season, and you love baseball. I love baseball. You're a college baseball guy. I coach high school baseball, and a lot of people don't know, but your dad played in the major leagues. It was part of the 1966 world champion Baltimore Orioles. You can look him up, man. I finally read his huge bio that was on, I think it was RIP Baseball, because your dad recently passed away about a year ago. So, you know, I'm sure we could talk about this for hours upon hours, but your dad, you know, you had a great relationship with your dad. Well, what's the neatest piece of memorabilia that you have of his that you've kept around?
Yeah, I'll answer that, Paul. But first, first and foremost, you kind of dealt with the same thing I have, and I've never met your dad, but the stories you told me about and the stuff I saw on social media, I think it's safe to say you and I were very fortunate to have great fathers. But, Paul, to answer your question, I'll say it's tough, it's emotional, but my mom gave me, about 2 weeks after he passed, gave me his World Series ring. And when he was, you know, he died of Alzheimer's, he, you know, it's tough last year of his life. But before that, he told my mom, you know, when he did pass, that he would, he'd want me to have it. So, yeah, I have his World Series ring. I'll keep it forever, and I'll probably pass it on to my son down the road when something happens to me. But yeah, that's to answer your question. That's something that that I have in my house, and I'll never forget it.
That's super special. He beat the Brooklyn Dodgers. Actually, swept them four games to nothing.
Yeah.
And yeah, you got that ring, which is an incredible memory that you're going to have. And then you're going to be sizing up state championship ring. So, Brad, again, thank you for allowing me to join you in this journey with your team this season. It's been a lot of fun. And congrats, my friend. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
No, thank you, Paul. And thank you to you and Gabe for everything you guys do. And we'll see you out on the ball field soon.
You bet. Absolutely. Coach Brad Rosnowski, head coach, San Joaquin Memorial Boys. Coming up after the break, another Brad Fonts, Buchanan head baseball coach, coming in to First String Sports on 1430 ESPN.
Into the Los Angeles Lakers on your local sports leader, 1430 ESPN. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Had a great conversation with Coach Brad Rosnowski, San Joaquin Memorial Boys, state champion, state championship, Division II. He's always been a good friend of the show, and just a great story. And they had 9 losses on the season, right? 9 losses and win a state championship. So congrats to them. Brad Fonts, Buchanan baseball coach, McLean grad, drafted 8th round, Texas Rangers. I put in your bio, coached at a bunch of places. I just put a bunch of places, right?
Yeah.
Including Fresno State.
Yeah.
Including Fresno State. You won the Central Section title in 2021. You know, March Madness. It's on the minds of everybody. You walk into the store here, First String Sports, got the games on. You got to have the games on. Are you you big college basketball guy, too?
Right. Absolutely. This time of year, yeah. The entire PE department filled out brackets, and they're all stapled on the wall, and everybody lost their mind when Purdue went out today or yesterday, and they're all talking about their brackets are getting smoked. So
I think that's the case with everybody. I think even midway through yesterday, I think it was 0.17% of the brackets were still alive.
Yeah.
As far as the perfect bracket.
Yeah.
Right. And it's all about getting some of those final four picks, right? If you get the champion, right, you get that big bonus. So do you remember who you picked to win it all?
Yeah, I picked, I don't know if I should say this. I picked Baylor to win it all, but
not terrible.
Not terrible, but I don't know. They didn't play very well last game, so they had to come on. So we'll see.
Well, they played against UC Santa Barbara. I mentioned Cole Anderson from Clovis West is on UC Santa Barbara. Yeah, I got Texas. I'm still alive with Texas. I like Rodney Terry's done an amazing job. I'm kicking myself. I mentioned I didn't have a show last week because I was in Vegas, and I did a couple parlay bets. Right? You put $20 down to try to win something pretty big, and I was kicking myself because I didn't pick Texas. That was just a stupid pick against Kansas. So I went against my gut on that one. But anyway, yeah, March Madness is fun. But, you know, I mentioned the weather too, Brad, and we're talking a little bit before you came on how rain, man. And it looks like it's coming Tuesday. I know track starts on Tuesday. But how has the rain impacted the season? Has it just been frustrating? You're frustrated for the kids, you know, the field conditions. There's just a lot of moving parts with this.
Yeah, kind of all the above. Unprecedented. Since I've been coaching, I don't remember a time where it's rained this much and this many days. It seems like just when the field starts to take it and we're able to get out there, then we get another storm coming in the next day. So it's the loss of practice time that has really affected us. You know, we have some kids that are inexperienced on our roster this year that really don't know how to practice. And losing those practice times and having to be cage rats and, you know, throw bullpens because we can cover those and then get in our cages because it's turfed. And, you know, when you're restricted to this, that, it's almost kind of forced you now to develop your inexperienced guys throughout the course of your conference, which we haven't had to do in a very long time. So that seems to be the challenge this year, to get these guys up to speed why you're playing conference games.
Do you feel like other coaches around the Central Valley are in the same boat as you, for lack of a better word?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Right, like, everybody's in the same thing.
Yeah.
I've noticed on the rosters through scouting and talking to Coach Kemp that there's numerous schools that have, I don't know, you want to call them young guys. They're 8 games in now, so they're not young anymore, but they're inexperienced guys. So, you know, everyone's in the same boat trying to get those guys up to speed without having time to practice. Makes for a very challenging conference.
Yeah, and the Bears right now, you guys are 4-4, starting league next week, coming off a pretty good win against Liberty. What's your assessment of where the team is at? You mentioned you guys are young and you need those reps. You need to be on the field, right? But what's your assessment of the team so far?
Yeah, I think where we're at right now, we're trying to figure out, like I said, how to practice, how to go about our business on a daily basis, and have intent and purpose, and you know, playing every pitch and everything being important. On the practice plan and what you do, you know, your cage work before you come and take BP, then figuring out that it's just not a time to go down there and swing, you know, to have intent with what you're doing. And that part of it is still missing. And today we're going at 11:30. We'll be able to get after it. The outfield's still wet, but we'll be able to pressure him a little bit and just try and grow those inexperienced guys and get them more comfortable being under pressure.
And I've been to quite a few Buchanan practices over the years, and man, it's structured in such a way that you're right. It has intent and purpose, right? Some of the fielding drills that you guys have, there's no resting. There's no putting anything your hands on your knees. It's go go go. You got to be intense, and you're getting the guys ready. What's the best way to explain your practices? Are you just trying to get them ready for game experiences? Is it reps? Is it the mental part combined with the physical? What's the intent for you and your coaching staff during practice?
It's kind of a little bit of all of those things, right? I mean, we want to get them to where when they get into a game that the game feels like it's slower, right? We want our practice to be fast and put them under pressure to where when they get into the game, they have the ability to slow it down. And I think that with the number of coaches we have and the experience of the coaches that we have, and to be fortunate enough to have that many coaches that have played at the next level and just be with them and be on them during those practices is invaluable. They help them, like we said, about slowing the game down. They help them with the fundamentals. And, you know, they coach them hard. And today's day, the kids, and I'm not saying they're different, kids are kids, but different kids react differently to being coached hard. And I think that is a big piece of understanding what we do, is knowing that we're coaching you hard because we love you. We're coaching you hard because we want you to be prepared, and we want you to be prepared for the next level, right? We're here to serve these kids. And, you know, that's part of why we go on the road and we play at places we've never been before, because at the next level, they're going to do that. Their freshman year, we're trying to get them ready to where they have an opportunity to contribute and compete at the next level. And they're going to roll into places where they've never been. And that was, you know, a little bit this year. We went to Valley Christian, and man, we ran into a buzzsaw. And it was an all turf field. It was beautiful up on a mountain and looking down, and just putting them in those situations, I think in the long run, we'll prepare them not only for our conference, but prepare them for the next level and being able to contribute early rather than having to redshirt or sit out a year or get minimal ABs.
And you got a couple, you know, D1 type players on your team. But I want to ask you, what are the strengths of this team? What does this team do well? Again, what, you played 8 games, right? And so you're still getting – you're getting used to this new crop of kids, so to speak. So what is the strength of this year's team, in your opinion?
I think right now we can pick it and throw it across the diamond. Defensively, we're still pretty solid. We can go get it in the outfield. We have a returning varsity catcher behind the plate with Peyton. JP runs the infield. He's been a great teammate and a great leader, which has contributed to our ability to play defense and get guys in the right position. Offensively, we're still trying to figure it out. You know, it's a little bit of a different identity this year, and we're embracing the inside game a little bit more. We're able to run a little bit more. Our team speed's pretty good. You know, last year we didn't do a lot of that. We had kind of big body guys that hit doubles and not a lot of bunting and inside game stuff. But, you know, you adjust to what your roster is, and I think the strength of these guys are team speed and being able to get a bunt down and move runners and kind of back to old school kind of baseball.
I love it.
You know, so it's exciting, to be honest with you, to have to coach a different way, to have a different philosophy. And, you know, to have all the coaches buy in on that and work towards that, and Coach Kemp and Suey and Jimmy Wilson and Dom and all those guys, they do a great job of embracing that.
Yeah, you have a wonderful coaching staff. Those are great guys and a wealth of knowledge. Talking with Coach Brad Fonts of Buchanan. League starting Tuesday, or supposed to, right? Rain's in the forecast. I see that 90% on Tuesday. But, you know, the track, I think it was, has it been 3 or 4 years? But the track then adopted a three-game-a-week season. 15
yeah.
games, 3 games a week. I remember when it was two games, like that deal, and then you play 1-1-1. But now it's 3 games, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Does it work? Do you like it? What are the positives? What are the drawbacks of something like that?
Yeah, I like it. I think it all started right when the regional stuff started, okay. And you had to play 3 in a week. And, you know, the schools down in Southern California were doing that, so we kind of took that model on to kind of force you to develop a third starter and to make your bullpen a little bit deeper and your staff a little bit deeper. I think the first year we did a Saturday game.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was coming off COVID, and we didn't like that. I mean, you really lost a practice day there. So when we went to Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, I think that format is a lot better. I think it's still when you're trying to figure out, you know, how hard to push these guys and being able to limit reps and keep legs fresh and keep arms fresh. You know, you have that one practice day on Monday, yeah. And you got that one practice day on Thursday. And that's been the biggest difference. When we were 2 games a week, you could have that Wednesday where you get after them because, you know, you had another practice day after that. And you could squad and you get guys reps that maybe didn't get reps in the game. And it's really hard to do that now because you're just trying to keep legs and arms and bodies fresh and stay injury free. And that's been a big piece. And I think the other thing is trying to figure out, because you're playing, you know, 3 games a week, what to do with that extra time. You know, this year we're going a week off after the Easter tournament. So we have that week down, and then we have a week off after our conference ends. And we've always had the week off after the conference ends in case there were some makeup games that needed to be played. This year it's probably going to come into fruition. I don't know. We'll see. But figuring out what the best time is and when to schedule. I know we lost 2 games with De La Salle and St. Yeah. Francis. So they were gracious enough to move their conference games around so we can make that up April 12th and 13th up there. So that having that week off has helped.
Yeah, looking at the schedule. So Monday, the 3rd, April, San Ramon Valley, and then in Washington. You're playing a team from Washington? Is that what that looks like? WA?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Doubleheader. All right. And then the De La Salle game, like you mentioned. Brad, I want to go back a little bit. Now that I got you here, it's your first time on my show, man. It's been waited until this moment. But I want to ask you a little bit about your own high school career. I found this out earlier this year that you started in Selma High and then transferred to McLean. So talk about your high school experience and how neat that was.
Yeah, it was interesting. I started in Selma, played football and baseball at Selma, and then we went up for a varsity game against McLean High School my sophomore year, and we got no hit by 3 different pitchers. yeah, they shoved. It was embarrassing. And then on the bus ride home, I was frustrated, and to see that there were not very many other teammates that were frustrated made me more frustrated. So we got home, and I had a talk with my dad, and I said, we got to get out of here. I want to get to where we can compete and play at a higher level of baseball. And at that time, that's where, you know, up there in Fresno, Clovis area, that was a higher level of baseball. And so he sold the house, and we moved that summer.
So you had that mentality at age, what, 14, 15, whatever you were, your sophomore year, you got your butts kicked and you didn't like it. You're like, yeah, Dad, let's go.
Yeah, and he was all in.
Wow.
I mean, I think I was 13 or something. I played with some of the men's leagues up here in Fresno. In fact, Ray Guzman's dad was one of the players that I played with, and they were full-grown men, and my dad threw me in there. And Ray said, okay, you're going to catch the second game of a doubleheader, and we played at Fink White, and we played at different places. And So it was exciting. It was a little intimidating, not going to lie. Yeah. There were some big guys that were playing on that team. But, you know, I think that philosophy holds true now. All these guys that are talented are playing up in age group and trying to push themselves the best they can.
Oh, wow. So you're 13 years old and you're playing in adult baseball, right?
Yeah.
Going against dudes.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, wow. That's awesome. And then so you have you're making waves at McLean, playing really good baseball, and you got a scholarship offer to Cal, right? You're
waiting
that, but you get drafted by the Texas Rangers in the eighth round. I mean, what was going through your mind at that time? You know, what went into that decision?
Well, it was actually tough because, you know, in high school back then, you know, you didn't commit to your senior year, and it wasn't done early, and then you just go play. So it was towards the end, and Cal had offered, and I committed to Cal. And when I did that, you know, they were talking, you know, they talk rounds, and they were higher rounds and stuff like that. And then when I committed and draft day came, I ended up dropping down to the eighth round, and they came with an offer, and you know, we told them no. And I called Coach Milano at Cal, and I said, hey, they didn't come with what we wanted. I'm going to Cal. Well, about 4 hours later, they came back with what we wanted. And I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to make this phone call. So I asked my dad, and I said, no kidding. I said, hey, Dad, will you call Milano and tell him that, you know, I'm going to sign with the Rangers? He goes, nope, if you're going to sign, you're going to do it yourself. Time to man up.
Because you're playing baseball at age 13 against man, you better man up.
So that was a tough conversation. But he was understanding, but it was still a tough phone call.
So you go and you're playing minor league ball, and you know it's a different game, right? And I want to ask you though, did you play against any future major league baseball all stars or Hall of Famers? You see some dudes that play against or with some guys that you might recognize?
Yeah. So my before I even left, I graduated the next day. We went to the Coliseum, and I got to work out with the Rangers. They were playing the A's, and you know, I got to take BP and catch some bullpens, and I'm down in the bullpen, and it's Gino Petrolli and Joe Ferguson, and this guy comes walking down, and he looks like he's 55, 60 years old, and he's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and he's having a hard time walking, and I turned to Joe Ferguson. I said, hey, is this the guy that's going to throw BP? And, you know, I didn't know anything. I'm 18 years old. I'm just blue, you know, behind the ears. I had no idea, and they kind of looked at me, and him and Petrolli started laughing. They said, no, it's Charlie Huff. And I'm like, okay, well, I still didn't know who Charlie Huff was. And so I'm going to catch his bullpen, and he throws, and I'm not kidding, he's flipping it up there about 60 miles an hour. And then he shakes his glove a little bit, and then all of a sudden here comes a knuckleball, and I'm not kidding. It went from left to right to left to right, and I didn't come within 10 feet of catching it. And they're laughing at me, and they give me a bigger glove. And, you know, now I'm starting to get mad, right? It takes some pride in what you do. So now I start catching it with my chest so it doesn't keep going by because I'm embarrassed. And so I got through that one, and then the next guy came down, and I knew who that was. It was Bobby Witt. So he starts throwing his bullpen. Now he's getting towards the end of the bullpen, and he's bumping it up. Yeah. And he's – back then, 92 was firm. Now it's not as firm, but – so now I'm catching that, and I'm catching it back there and just trying to get through that bullpen. And, you know, then you got to go on a BP, and BP starts, and I swing, and I hit a ground ball, and I'm just tight and puckered up, you know, young guy. And finally, you know, they're getting Pete Incaviglia's all over me, standing behind me in the cage, and what round you get drafted in, just razzing me. And I finally square one up and hit one off the fence, and so that helped a little bit. But it was quite the experience. It was thrown into the fire a little bit, and it was pretty cool. And then my half season, we got sent to Sarasota, Florida. I think I left, I was like 182 pounds, so I was in pretty good shape. And we go down there for the half season, and it's 2.5 months. And then I go to instructional leagues in November. And when I was done with that, I got home before I went back spring training. I was 162. Ooh. So
your diet wasn't needed to be.
Trying to figure that all that stuff out. So then I got with Samark, and we were in the weight room every day, and Coach Samarco, and we lifted, and we'd eat, and we'd run and get in shape. And I went back spring training 190, so right. It was challenging.
Talking with Brad Fonts, we only got a couple of minutes here, Coach. You know, how did all those experiences, right, lead you then to Buchanan, right? You know, your experience at McLean and then Selma. I love that story about how you're like, man, I want better competition. You mentioned, you know, you coached at Fresno State as well. But how do all those moments growing up playing baseball prepare you for coaching Buchanan, running a program?
I think it's just taking from everybody that you've been exposed to. You know, Jimmy Sarmark over at McLean, coaching with him, and then playing for Merv Carter and George Amachi, and then some of the stuff from pro ball still holds true. You know, that some people call it old school baseball stuff, but it's still baseball stuff. And we talk about it quite a bit on the coaching staff that, you know, I understand that there are new ways to do things and stuff, but there's still the basic fundamental stuff that still holds true now. And we were just talking before, like, I think that we've lost the feel, right? The kinesthetic guy that feels his body or feels his barrel, what he's able to do. And it's gone so much to visual with the video and putting guys into correct positions that they've lost a feel for their game. And we're just trying to do that. I mean, yesterday with the catchers, we're trying to get them a little bit more athletic. So I stick them at shortstop, and we're flipping them balls, turning double plays, and just exchange and getting the ball out rather than the fundamental of catching and turning and throwing and doing all that, just trying to be more athletic. And I think that no matter how advanced the game gets, that piece will still be in.
Yeah, there's still a core of baseball. It's still 90 feet, right?
Yeah.
60 feet, 6 inches. Yeah. I mean, all those things are still pure. Brad, you know, it's – you know, I always feel, you know, blessed and welcome when I come to your practices and games, and you're always willing to talk. So I really appreciate you. You guys are playing Clovis East, hopefully on Tuesday, a 3-game series, and then Wednesday looks like it's home away home, Wednesday and Friday as well, 6:30 starts, 3:30 if Tuesday holds up. But always appreciate you, Brad.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. You appreciate it.
All right. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking with Cam Schneider, Bullard High Baseball, our 1430 Athlete of the Week on 1430 ESPN.
1430 ESPN Fresno. In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. That's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to hour number 2 of the Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports. I've talked about the weather a lot, but I need to mention Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating as well. They are a sponsor of the show and sponsor of 1430 ESPN. So shout out to those guys. I actually saw the truck driving the freeway. I teach in Traver. I've taught there for 25 years, and so I've been on 99 a lot, and I saw their truck, and I almost wanted to, you know, drive up next to him and say, hey, you're sponsoring my show, but I want to freak that guy out. You never know what's going to happen on the freeway. But I want to welcome Cam Schneider to the show. Bullard, he's a senior. He's the not only the reigning CMAC player of the year, but he's the 2-time. So he won the CMAC baseball player of the year as a sophomore as well. He signed with Fresno State. You signed already? It's signing day happened,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, already signed.
Already signed, sealed, and delivered for Fresno State. The Knights are currently 4-3. You know, we had a great conversation with Coach Brad Font from Buchanan. We mentioned how the rain has just wreaked havoc on the season so far. So Bullard's played 7 games this year. They're 4-3. On Tuesday, I was able to watch Cam pitch a complete game shutout against Bakersfield Christian. Man, complete games, those are hard to come by these days. And I know he's a strike thrower and, you know, low pitch count guy, so he's able to throw a complete game. But, yeah, Cam, welcome to First String Sports. Have you ever been in this store? I'm sure you have, right?
Been here a lot. We used to have a hidden facility behind this, so I used to be here all the time.
Tee it up, hit it a little bit, yeah.
Exactly.
So we talked a little bit off air too, Cam, about March Madness. You said this is the first time you haven't filled out a bracket.
Yeah, haven't
right?
done.
What's up with that?
Haven't watched much basketball this year. I figured why would I watch it or why would I – filled a bracket if I didn't know what was going on.
Well, you can get lucky, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, we have a family March Madness bracket with some other families, and, you know, you just kind of pick the teams who you think, you know, the colors or, you know, pick a couple upsets here and there. But,
yeah
March Madness is a lot of fun. But I know you played I think, actually, I first heard about you because, you know, my kids go to Bullard when you were a freshman. And I got a freshman that's on the basketball team. He's probably going to play varsity baseball as well. Oh, man, they got a dude. So you played varsity basketball as a freshman.
Yeah.
And then decided to purely concentrate on baseball after that. Like, do you feel when you were a freshman and playing varsity sport for the first time, like sometimes it takes a while for a kid's body to get used to the speed or the athleticism. I mean, you're playing against 17, 18-year-olds is probably what, you're probably 14 years old as a freshman. But, you know, you feel like it took a while for you to get acclimated to varsity sports so young?
It was weird. So I was on JV for the first 2 weeks.
That's right.
And then I had Coach Amundson call me. He's like, hey, why don't you come up to a varsity practice on Saturday? I was like, all right, let's go. So I went there. I had nothing to lose. I was just going to give it my all. And I ended up doing really, really good. He's like, all right, well, come back tomorrow. You're on varsity now. So
Let me swap out that JV jersey for a varsity jersey. Right?
Yeah. I still remember we went to San Francisco. That was my first game I played in. I was against a 7-footer. So that didn't go too well for me.
So did Coach Amundson and the coaching staff, did they try to get you to play all these other seasons or just pass you by in the hall and say, you want to play basketball?
It's pretty much that. It's like, Cam, if you want to spot, your number's still here, so you can come out and play.
Can you still dunk a basketball?
I can.
You're 6'3".
Yep.
You're in good shape. You can still dunk a basketball.
I figured this out with my dad last night, yeah. He didn't think I could do it still, so I had to show him that I could.
Where'd you do it at?
So I was at one of my little brother's friend's houses, and we put it up to 10. He told me I couldn't, so I had to prove him wrong.
And you did it.
Yes, sir.
One foot or what, 2 feet?
2 feet, two hands.
2 feet, two hands, coming up from the left side because you're right-handed, right?
Yep.
Are you sure it was regulation?
Pretty positive.
Did we double check?
No double checking, but.
Was it one of those adjustable?
Yeah.
Adjustable
it was
wrench?
The one with, like, the little swirl
knob.
Oh,
a little crank?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, a little crank thing. Okay. All right, so that was the first time you tried it in like a year?
Yeah, it's been a while.
But you can still do it.
Yeah.
And you could palm a basketball, right? So
that
definitely helps. I want to go back to baseball. And, you know, we talked about you playing basketball. But, you know, what are some of your first memories of playing baseball? Did you – you know, you're one of those kids where the dad put a bat in your hand when you were, you know, 2 months old and made you hold a bat, or do you have some of your first memories?
I was barely four. I remember this because my dad told me, but my sister's T-ball team didn't have enough players, so that's when I started playing. So I've been playing for a very long time, but one of my favorite memories is we're playing out at a tournament with Andy Zavoric as our coach for our Buller team, and we weren't allowed to hit until we laid a bunt down for a hit. So that was a memory because it was like, hey, we're not going to win unless we get our jobs done. So,
how old were you?
I was probably 8 years old.
And so Coach Dvorak's making you bunt before you swing the bat.
Every single guy on the team before they could swing had to do that. So,
I mean, you're eight, so obviously you're not going to say, no, Coach, I'm not doing that, right?
Exactly.
So did you play – and you went to Tenaya?
Yes, sir.
Tenaya as well. Did you play, like, Big Garden, or you played Little League, or is it just, like, travel ball as soon as you can remember?
So I played in the Little League at Fig Garden, of course, and after that we did the states, regional, stuff like that with our Buller team.
So who did you grow up playing baseball with that's now on the Bullard? I'm going to get into a couple other guys that are playing for other schools that you grew up playing baseball with, but who are some – Buller guys that you've played with, you know, since you were younger?
Honestly, most of the guys, you got Murphy, Stubblefield, a bunch of guys like that, Luke, Beal, Jake Porter, basically our whole starting nine I've played with, and even the guys on the bench I've played with since I can remember.
How many guys, were a lot of those guys on varsity as sophomores?
Most of them, yes. Yeah, for the most part,
okay.
A few of them on varsity as freshmen too.
So we talked about basketball, playing as a freshman, playing varsity and being acclimated, you know, you're play against a 7-footer, right? And I think it's always difficult for a freshman, especially sometimes for sophomores as well, but for freshmen to play on a varsity level because you need to get acclimated to the other guys, right? To seniors and juniors. And, you know, let's be honest, right? If you're a freshman coming in, you got to prove yourself.
Exactly.
And sometimes you're taking a spot from an upperclassman as well. And so those dynamics can be really difficult. So your freshman year is probably a learning curve, right, for you. And do you feel like you had to prove yourself? Did you try to keep your mouth shut? You know what I mean? I'm just gonna play ball and do the best of my ability and let everything take care of itself? Or is there just like a big learning curve for you?
So for basketball, it's kind of like I'm just going to be quiet, do what I can. And then after a few weeks of that, I kind of got used to the guys. Guys got used to me, so that was really good. For baseball, it was – hey, I'm a freshman. I'm playing up right now. I've just finished basketball. This was before COVID hit. I had two games in. But for those two games where I got ABs, it was like, hey, like, I'm here and I got to show what I can do. So for baseball, it was kind of more I have to prove myself than it was for basketball.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, baseball is a sport I love, so I really wanted to show the people that I could do it.
Talking with Cam Schneider of Bullard, was there a moment during that season, during your freshman year, where maybe a coach said something to you, or maybe an upperclassman, or maybe there was a play on the field that, like, yeah, I belong up here?
Yeah, there was a few in practice. There was a few balls that, like, no one thought I could get to, lay out, get, make the play. It's like, okay, you can be up here. There's a few moments like that, few at-bats in the games I had. I had 5 at-bats. One of them was off last name Beal. I believe he's at UNLV.
He is.
I had an at-bat off him, got a single through the 6-hole. I remember that one vividly because I was like, let's do this.
Yeah. So that was Noah Beal of Clovis High, right?
Yeah.
And I believe he used his final year. He's at USC right now.
Okay.
So Noah Beal's at USC. So now you're a senior. All right, we'll fast forward a little bit and play third base and pitch. Now you're a senior, and those experiences you had growing up playing Bullard baseball and being a freshman on varsity, how have you helped out in your leadership role as a senior with some of the younger guys? I know you got a good mix this year of you know, sophomores, juniors, and seniors, but how has that helped you your senior year as far as leadership goes?
For me, it was, I knew how I handled well with criticism and stuff like that, well, whether that came from a coach or another guy on the team. So for me, it's, I'm not always the guy who's going to be really harsh on you. I'm going to be the guy who, when you make an error, I'm going to come pat you on the back, be like, all right, let's go get another one. I'm not, never going to yell at you for taking strike 3 without swinging. It's, hey, what'd you see? Let's make an adjustment for the next one. So that, getting coached like that helped me, so that's how I'm trying to help the younger guys on our team.
And that's hard, right?
And, yeah.
And it shows maturity as well. And I know you have a great head coach in Coach Tom Donald, one of the best high school coaches in the nation. What has he taught you? You know, because I've watched Coach Donald's journey, right, from Buchanan out of Bullard, have conversations with Coach. And he talks a lot about the mental game.
Yep.
Right? And the physical stuff will catch up. And once you're used to his system and how he works and how he runs practices and all those things, that stuff will come. But he talks a lot about the mental aspect of the game. How has Coach helped you improve your baseball game physically or mentally? What are some specific ways?
A lot of the things are, say I go 0-for-4 twice, 2 games in a row, and it's, so what? Like, you got another game, you're going to have another at-bat, let's go do it then. It's not as much like, oh, what did I do wrong? It's flush it, let's get to the next at-bat, stuff like that. And when you're going through hard times, he'll be there to pick you up. Somehow he always has something to tell you that works for you. But, I mean, the mental aspect for him and the rest of the guys on the team, he's helped us in ways that most people don't even understand. Because a lot of people don't understand the amount of mental level that it takes to be a high-level baseball player. And he's, I think, the part of the reason of all of his success is because he knows how to teach it to the guys who he coaches.
And I think that's so true. He's seen everything under the sun with baseball. His son was a major leaguer. He's coached major leaguers. He's,
yeah.
He's done it all in the baseball world as far as the high school level. But, you know, I think for Coach Donald, I think that's what separates him from a lot of coaches, is that mental part. And, you know, I think the best coaches, too, are those types of coaches that you want to run through a wall for them.
Yep.
Right? You don't want to disappoint them. Coach Admonson's the same way, mm-hmm. right? It's like you want to please your coaches, and I think that's true, at all levels, especially high school and down and younger. But, you know, is that the type of program now that Bullard has become where, you know, the mental part of the game and blending the physical part of the game, and you guys are just, a top-level program again?
Yeah. I mean, we've done a lot of hard work with him. I know every guy on our team would run through a wall for him,
yeah.
and it's vice versa, which helps the team come together more for us. But I think because of those reasons, I think this year will be special for
us.
I agree.
You guys are one of the top teams in the Central Section. I want to ask you about your first home run. All right, how many home runs you have in your career?
I have no idea.
You don't? I don't either.
No.
I just was curious. Do you remember your first one?
I remember my first one. So we were out at, I believe, Hanford, and I got a pitch at, like, my eyebrows. I had a thing for swinging at those when I was younger, and I took a hack on it, and it went over by, like, 50 feet. I was honestly surprised I got to it, but it was a really cool moment. Had it on video, had all the guys going crazy. It was awesome.
It was one of those swings where it felt like you really didn't hit it. It was just so pure. It's like, oh, that thing's going and going and going.
It was one where you couldn't even feel it come off the bat.
So you pitched that shutout against Bakersfield Christian on Tuesday, right? And was it the second game of the year where you pitched at Clovis?
Yes.
That's the second game of the year? And you threw a no-hitter?
No-hitter.
Right. And how many pitches did you throw? You threw like under about 90?
Yeah, I was under 90. I think I was around 86.
Yeah, I think it was 86 pitches, seven innings. You didn't strike out a lot, probably about six or seven guys.
Less than that, I think.
Yeah, but, I mean, that just shows that you trusted your defense.
Yeah.
How cool was that, right? Like, did you even think about, oh, I got a no-hitter when you went out for the seventh inning? You know, let's talk about that. Like,
okay.
Did you know about it during the game? Would you kind of keep an eye on that scoreboard? Like, oh, man, I got a no-hitter. Were guys talking to you at all?
Yeah, it was weird. Like, no one was talking about it. I looked up. I was like, oh, I got no hits. That's cool. I didn't even – the no-hitter part didn't even come to me until after the last out. But looked up before the seventh inning. I was like, all right, let's keep going. Like, I'm not going to get my hopes up because every time that happens, they get a knock. But I was like, I'm just going to go out there, put the ball over the plate, let them hit it, let the defense work for me. And that's what happened. It worked really well for us. And ended up having the no-hitter, so that was really cool.
What was the final out? Was it a ground ball pop-up?
I believe it was a ground ball.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was there a huge celebration, or just guy just going, like, hey, good job? I mean, you guys weren't jumping around like you won
the section title. We weren't going crazy. I had all the guys come out like, oh, my God, you just threw a no-hitter. I was like, I guess I did. It was a kind of surreal moment. We got into the outfield. Then we kind of went nuts in the outfield after, you know, everybody got it. But it was a really good moment for me and the rest of the team.
After you shake hands, right? Then you celebrate later. You committed to Fresno State pretty early. Was it your sophomore
junior
year? Your junior year.
Yeah.
Committed to Fresno State. Did you always want to be a Bulldog? Obviously, you're a Fresno guy through and through. But, I mean, was that always the goal?
So I started talking to a lot of colleges before I started talking to Fresno State. But I grew up watching Fresno State football, Fresno State basketball, all the sports at Fresno State, even baseball. But I didn't talk to them until really late into my sophomore year when I was already talking to a lot of other schools. But I remember we were just talking about it with Caden Munster. We were out at scout ball at Fresno State, and we were like, wouldn't it be great to play at our hometown? Munch was like, yeah, of course. And, you know, I think like two or three days after that, I was like, Munch, I'm going to commit here today. He's like, let's do it. So I called up the coach. We committed there. I think he was either a day or two behind me. But, I mean, that was a great moment for me and him together because we've played together almost our whole entire lives. So us going to the same place together, knowing what we want to do together, I think that's going to be really special for us.
Talking with Cam Scheider, headed to Fresno State, currently a senior at Bullard. So Caden Munster, Clovis West guy, Jaden Mandel, Buchanan guy. You know, Jaden's at Fresno State playing football already.
Yep.
He's foregoed, I guess you could say, his senior year of baseball. You got a special relationship with those guys.
Yeah.
You play travel ball. You guys know each other very, very well. So you mentioned a little bit how cool that was, but man, how cool are those guys, you know, to be on this journey with you as well? Talk about your friendship with those guys.
I mean, they're the best. I've played against them and with them. Played against Mandel for longer than I did Munster. But, I mean, those guys, they love working, which I appreciate because I don't want a guy who's going to be like, hey, it's Friday night. Let's go do this. I want to go hit.
Yeah.
Like, I want guys like that, which both of them are, which is great to me. Those guys are always – they're always going 100% in their sport, which I respect a lot because I believe I do the same thing. So it's a great group of guys going over there.
What other schools were interested in you?
I was talking to Stanford for a while, a lot of the Mountain West, a bunch of schools like that. Had some talks with UCLA. So,
but Fresno State was pretty much a slam dunk.
Yeah.
Right? Like when you so who's actually the one that offered you?
Overland.
It was Overland.
Yeah.
And now he's obviously the head coach.
Yeah.
So you, now that you're officially signed, right, the communication, you can communicate with coach, right? Who else is part of this class besides Munster, do you know of?
We have Munster. We have a few pitchers that are really legit. We have a guy, we have two lefties, a right-handed guy who will get up to 94. We got some bats. We got, I think, three shortstops coming in my class. So we're going to have – we'll have some stacked guys in our class.
It's going to be loaded.
Yeah.
It's going to be loaded next year. So what's been the best, your favorite, I guess, moment so far with Bullard, right? You mentioned your home run.
Yeah.
The no-hitter. You had that shutout on Tuesday against a pretty darn good Bakersfield Christian team.
Yeah.
What's your favorite moment so far?
Probably my sophomore year. We were playing against Buchanan, and Brady Zavorek got hit in the face of the at-bat before.
I know this
then
guy.
Goes for a two-run bomb his next at-bat, and we won, I believe it was 2-0, but
yeah.
That was a great moment for us. We had people at one of our friends' house. The whole team was there. All the parents were there. It was a great day for the Bullard community as a whole.
I remember that. I remember that game. That's right. It was 2-0.
Yep.
Buchanan. You got a center fielder.
Yeah.
You? Trevor Wilson, again, in that Bakersfield Christian game. A couple fly balls were hit pretty good.
Yeah.
A couple line drives. And it's like, you got a dude out there. You got
exactly.
The utmost confidence. He hit a grand slam, gave
yep.
you a lot of cushion in that third inning, won 5-0. What's it like to have a center fielder of his caliber who's going to UC Irvine, where you know that anything hit out there, shallow, deep, whatever, that you're going to have a dude back there?
The best part about it is when the ball is hit in the air, I have no doubt that's going to get caught, whether it's on a line, whether it's deep. The only way it's going to get down is if it goes over the fence or it's a bloop shot.
And it's a big fence out there in center field. If you hit it out there, you deserve
congratulations.
It.
Congratulations.
Exactly.
But, I mean, it's not just Trevor Wilson. We have Jackson Murphy and Nick Stubblefield. It doesn't matter what part of the ballpark it goes to. I know it's getting caught. I think we have the best outfield in the Valley, if I'm being honest. But anything that's in the air, I know it's getting caught, which is really nice when you're pitching.
Oh, absolutely. And let's be honest. You know, you're tall. You're 6'3". You throw hard. Got a little slide piece as well. It's probably very tempting for you, especially your senior year, CMAC Player of the Year. You just want to shove in terms of just blowing it by guys.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. I know I could get it by this guy. But the art of pitching and the trusting your teammates – knowing if you get a ground ball here in this situation that it's going to be an out, and you can save your pitches as well.
Exactly.
Have you had to adjust your game, your pitching game a little bit? Because I'm sure it's tempting just to try to throw a ball past a guy every time.
Yeah.
But the art of pitching, has that been an easy sequence for you to learn?
Well, honestly, there's some points where I'm just trying to blow it by guys. But, I mean, I'm in high school. Everybody loves to do that. But there's times for it. There's times when you need to get that changeup blowing in for him to roll over for a double play. But the art of pitching has been really it took a while to get there, but Coach Gross, our pitching coach, has helped me get there quicker than I thought I'd be able to get there. But, I mean, he's talked about pitches in these counts, all types of different ways of working batters, but he's been great by teaching me the ways that, I mean, he did. I mean, he had a very successful career as well.
He did, absolutely. And then Fresno State, are they planning on having you play third base position or pitch? Have they talked to you about that?
Yeah, I'll be in the infield.
All right. Get that bat, right?
Exactly.
Play every day. We only got a couple minutes here, Cam. Who's your favorite MLB team? Are you a Giants guy?
I'm a Red Sox fan.
You're a Red Sox fan. All right. How did that happen?
So my dad growing up was a Yankees fan, still is, but he loved the Yankees. So me being his son, I chose to go with the team that he does not like, and I chose the Red Sox.
That's awesome. That's great. Who's your favorite player?
I like Mike Trout. I love the way he plays.
I do too.
He doesn't get enough. Like, you look at ESPN Network at night and you see a bunch of titles about other guys, and you don't look at the guy who's hit above 300 every single season and just does what he needs to get done, doesn't talk about what he does, and just does it.
He's my second favorite baseball player of all time. Mike Piazza is my favorite.
Okay.
And if you ever watch Mike Trout in person, have you ever watched him in have you been to a game with him?
I've not had that yet.
I mean, physically, he's just imposing. He's like the perfect baseball
he's
player.
He's a monster.
I mean, I have a man crush on the guy. I'm not afraid to admit that on air. But, yeah, he's amazing. Mike Trout, I'm playing the WBC, the World Baseball Classic. And, yeah, I got to agree with you. He's a Hall of Famer for sure.
He gets the job done every time his number is called, which is hard to do.
No, he is. And I think with Mike, the reason why he doesn't, you know, he's not the face of Major League Baseball, which he very well could be, is he's just – he likes the weather. Like, he's obsessed with the weather, and he's a family guy now. And so he just loves baseball.
He's a great guy.
Okay. Well, last question for you, Cam. Bullard, 4-3. League's about to start. Does league start this week for you guys, or we got one more week?
We have Memorial on Saturday. So.
You have Memorial on Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the limit for this Bullard baseball team? And sky's the limit for this team, right?
Yeah. Honestly, I think – if we keep playing how we need to be playing, which I think we've gotten there the past few weeks after we went up north to play the better teams up there. But after that, we realized what we need to work on. We got to the point where we think we can do it now. And we showed it yesterday against Clovis North. And I think this year is going to be something special for the Bullard community, which is I'm very happy to say that.
Good stuff. This is your senior year. You've had a great career so far. So thanks, Cam, for coming in. Always love watching you play baseball, and good luck the rest of the year.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
A lot of fun. All right, coming up after the break, we'll be chatting with Gabe Camarillo, High school sports through and through here on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Paul Metters. If you missed any part of any conversations for any one of our shows, the Jose Gonzalez Show, Home Field Advantage, Tony Diodato Show, Trusted Voice, you could go back to the 1430 ESPN website, go to podcast, and go to our shows. You can download it. They're all archived, which is really cool. I've had some really good conversations with some Major League Baseball players. I got to interview Stephen Vogt, Oakland A's, Central Valley Christian grad. And, he actually latched on. He retired this year, latched on pretty quick to the Seattle Mariners. He's their quality control coach and bullpen coach. So that is really, really neat. I had a great conversation with him last year. Tom Goodwin was in, 6 weeks ago for the Fresno State alumni game. Tommy and I chopped it up for about an hour, just great memories with him. If you guys missed anything, go back to those episodes and check them out. Home Field Advantage, Gabe Camarillo is coming on the show right now, Monday through Thursday. You can listen to him 3 to 5. Follow him at Gabe Camarillo _. Kind of a little bit of a basketball wrap-up show. Mentioned Craig Campbell being one of the 100 most influential people in women's college basketball, which was really cool to see. We celebrated Central's Division II championship. Gabe talked to the coach, Paul Kiriuki, and Talia Maxwell, talked to Coach Brad Rosnowski earlier in the program. Just a great guy. A phenomenal program that he runs there. And again, congratulations to the Sierra boys and St. Joe's boys basketball team for making the state championship as well. Gabe, we're going to be talking about baseball in just a second, and you had the privilege, man. I was so excited for you. I was in Las Vegas, and I was living vicariously through you because you were able to check out firsthand the Golden One Arena state championship game. So first of all, just describe how cool it was to be there and experience everything. I mean, was that your first time there?
No, my second time. I went to follow the Clovis North boys basketball team when they made it to the state championship about a year ago. The thing about the state championships was it was like the biggest stage in high school basketball. Like, you see March Madness this weekend, and you see how that's the biggest stage in college basketball. Well, it's kind of like the same deal for a California state championship session, where you have six straight games on Friday, then six straight games on Saturday. I mean, credit to the CIF for being able to run an event like that and have press conferences and do it up kind of like what the Central section does for the finalists here at Sound Arena. They do the same for the state finalists in Sacramento. And so it was, first of all, cool to see the atmosphere, to have, you know, the hospitality room for the media, and to have, you know, different media figures from across the state. You're going to turn around and bump into Mark Tennis and Eric Sondheimer and Steve Fryer and Joe Davidson, some of the, you know, big media moguls of high school sports here in California. But then what we saw on the court was even better. I mean, we saw some high-level play from all of our Central Section teams, even starting on Friday with the Sierra Chieftains. They ran into a buzzsaw with Linwood. Linwood was just on a roll in the state playoffs because they've had the state's leading scorer, Jason Crow Jr., who's only a freshman, by the way, and he's already scoring 36 points a game, and he had 34 in Linwood's win over Sierra. But nothing to hang your head over if you're Sierra, because you went up against some big schools in your playoff runs. You were put in Division III, two divisions higher than you were in the state playoffs, and you actually made it to the D3 section finals. And then when you were put in D5 at the state playoff level, you won your first four state playoff games in school history to make it to your first state championship in school history. So if you're Sierra, this season was a success. And as you mentioned, Paul, at the start of the show, Logan Kilbert comes back another year, and he's a serious shot at breaking the Central Section's all-time scoring record. But that wasn't the only Central Section team, right? On Saturday, you had the Memorial Boys and Central Girls take home state championships in back-to-back games. Like, it would have been cool, let alone to have it on the same day and have it like one at 12 and one at 6. But to have a 4-hour, maybe even a 5-hour block of Central Section teams winning state championships did wonders for the exposure of our section, because at the state championships, everyone's there. Everyone from NorCal's there. Everyone from SoCal's there in regards to media, in regards to high school basketball fans. I mean, people make the trip to Sacramento just to watch these games like anyone would for March Madness, right? And they saw the Central Section represent twice, win championships twice. I think the rest of the state's going to have to keep in mind that the Central Valley can ball up.
And I think it was just great for the Central Valley that our teams were represented. We talk a lot, Gabe, about how we feel like we're not respected, right? SoCal doesn't respect us. NorCal doesn't want us because we beat their teams up there. But for our Central Section to be well represented in the state playoffs was awesome. And I felt too, Gabe, I know you're there watching the games with your own eyeballs, but I felt like in both the championship wins, like they, even though, you know, Memorial was the sixth seed, I can't remember, was Central about the sixth seed or the five seed?
Central, when were they seeded? Central was the four seed.
They were the four seed. Okay. I felt like they weren't upsets at all. Like, I felt like Memorial and Central were the better teams in both games, right? You agree?
Yeah.
Obviously,
well,
they won, but I felt like they were the dominant teams. Maybe I should phrase it.
Yeah, they were dominant because they were the bigger teams. I mean, Bonita Vista had no one to guard Talia Maxwell. And Bonita Vista's bread and butter had been three-point shooting. And their head coach answered questions about it during the press conference after they lost about, you know, missing 25 three-pointers. They were 2 of 27 from three-point range. And, you know, it's just a matter of if you're really good at one thing, but that one thing can kind of get distorted in a big arena like the Golden 1 Center, right? The three-point shot's hard to shoot in that arena when you're used to shooting it in a gym. You hear about it at the Celland Arena games, how you get Cellended. I think Bonita Vista, they came in with the game plan of shooting threes because that's what they did in the state playoff run. They were a really good offensive team. They were averaging about 75 points a game in their first four state playoff wins. But then against Central game plans to take them off the three and to make those threes difficult, and they have a tough shooting night. And that, I think, was a huge part to Central's win. And so I would say they were the better team. They played better defense, and they were better on the boards. But it's easy to be good on the boards when you have a player like Talia Maxwell. You haven't mentioned her stat line yet, so let me bring it up here. 24 points, 24 rebounds, and 6 blocks. Like, that does not – I can't even do that in 2K if I tried. I could put the sliders all the way to easy and try putting up that stat line on NBA 2K, my video game, and I couldn't do it. Talia Maxwell did something that even you couldn't do in a video game, only stuff that state championship heroes can do, and that was one of the best state championship performances, I would say, ever, because she broke records in that game. That was the most rebounds in a D2 title game ever.
Yeah, I mean, that's a dominant performance, and you mentioned how, you know, the team that they played, you know, what shot 2 for 27? Is that what you said?
Yeah, threes? 2 for 27.
So they could say they got goldened, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how you could. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, so they weren't able to adjust, but yeah, incredible run for them. And then the San Joaquin Memorial boys, we talked to Coach Roz earlier in the show. I mean, yeah, we followed these guys all year, and we watched them lose to Clovis North by 19. And you know, Coach Ross was open and honest. He's like, I got to change some things as a coaching staff. We got to do things different. And the guys bought in. We watched that team kind of in front of our eyes, Gabe, grow and mature, become a really, really strong basketball game. Did they play? You know, I know Coach Ross said the first half was a little bit ugly, but that team just put it all together at the end, didn't they?
Yeah. The second half team for San Joaquin Memorial was better than the first half team. And even in general, they've been a second half squad as a group. Watching this team, even against Sierra Canyon, when they fell behind early to Sierra Canyon, we saw in the third quarter they climbed closer and they gave Sierra Canyon a good game. And Sierra Canyon obviously has a lot of big names on that squad, Bronny James, Hardaway, you know, etc. That's how I knew this team could be pretty special, when they were close with Sierra Canyon, but then they kind of got in that lull, and I saw them lose to TMI at the Clovis West Nike Invitational. They looked out of sorts there. Then they had the struggles against the Damien Classic teams, but the funniest thing about them facing Pacifica Christian was that even when you could say they were playing subpar basketball or not their best, they beat Pacifica Christian because they went for a stretch of their 5 of 6 games they lost. But the one game they didn't lose in that stretch of play was Pacifica Christian. They beat them by 10. So going into Saturday, I had a feeling that this team could beat Pacifica Christian now that they were playing their best basketball. But that first half looked a little weird. I think a lot of jitters between both teams. It was scoreless through the first 4 minutes almost. And finally in the second half, the defense came alive. Coach Roz was saying he was switching up man and zone. And, you know, when you have a guy like Mike Davis Jr. down there in the paint to defend and affect shots, you can do stuff like that. You can be able to take away the driving ability of Pacifica Christian, because that was really how they were getting most of their points. They forced Pacifica Christian to settle for outside shots or settle for shots later in the shot clock. Just great defense for Memorial, and we know what they can do on offense. They got several capable scorers. Julius Olenwaju, Amari Caraway, and Mike Davis Jr. can get buckets. Dre Davis had a huge three at the end of the third quarter to really kind of put it away. I won't say put it away because there was still an entire quarter left, but it really gave them breathing room to hold on in that fourth quarter. Not for a moment in that second half that I feel like Memorial was going to lose, because that's how well they played after halftime.
No, I agree. Yeah, just from the sense that I got following on Twitter and texting you every once in a while, I felt like Memorial had it in the bag. And when I finally saw it on Twitter, I was like, yep, they did it. Those guys put it all together, played their best basketball late in the season. Okay, Gabe, just kind of the wrap-up show for me regarding basketball. A couple of things that pop out with me. You know, you could chime in and with some of your comments on this, but you know, Clovis West girls winning their 11th straight Central Section title. We talk about that program a lot, but deservedly so. Logan Kilbert from Sierra averaging 30 points a game with a chance to break the all-time scoring record. No Central Section player has scored 3,000 points, and Logan is already over 2,000. You know, if he could get around 800 points, he's going to be able to break the record. Carruthers girls, you know, they almost made it to another state championship game. We talked a lot about them, and should they be in D1, and just the program that they run is just a great success story. And the Kingsburg boys, forget about them a little bit. Their incredible run that they had in basketball, not only beating Sierra for the Central Section title, you know, but on the road beating those three area Bakersfield teams was a great story. You got any thoughts about those? You got some of your own, Gabe?
I just think in general, a season of what ifs. What if Connor Amundson played for Clovis North? Do they make it further in the section and state playoffs? You know, what if Clovis West managed to, you know, string together a comeback against St. Joe's? Or what if they were just able to find something against Granada in that final minute of the game? I think Clovis West could have gone on a state playoff run too. The state playoffs in general were interesting and kind of added a unique perspective to this season, because I always like saying what ifs, right? What if Memorial wasn't the sixth seed at the section playoff seeding day? What was it, Selection Saturday? We were all sitting on our iPhones looking to see where every team would go, and Memorial gets the sixth seed, and they're upset about it. And rightfully so. They should have been the five seed, but because of a tiebreaker rule, Stockdale beat Edison. Memorial lost to Edison once, and that's what kept Memorial the sixth seed. Well, I think that's why Memorial won a state championship, because Memorial as the sixth seed got matched up with the best team in the section, the three-seeded St. Joseph Knights. They lost to them in the quarterfinals. If they don't lose in the quarterfinals, they're not in Division II. If they go to the semifinals, and that's what they probably would have done if they were the five seed, then they're in Division I, and they're a low seed in Division I, like a 14-15 seed facing, like, one of the best teams in the state, Sierra Canyon, Notre Dame, Sherman Oaks. They could face one of those teams if they got put in Division I. And so I think it's interesting to mention that competitive equity is a problem, and sometimes it helps the Central Section a little bit. Let's be honest. The Central Section benefited from competitive equity with Central and San Joaquin Memorial's seeding in the state playoffs. I think it's fair to say, if you're going to complain about competitive equity when it hurts the Central Section, then at least say when it helps the Central Section, and keep it fair on both sides.
No, I agree. Yeah, lots of moving parts in that. Yeah, if San Joaquin Memorial, you know, beats St. Joe's and makes it to that championship game, you know, it's, a lot of moving parts to that game. I want to mention baseball before we take a break. Baseball, wacky, wild, topsy-turvy. We don't know. You and I were talking on your show on Thursday. Who are the best teams? Well, there's lots of best teams in baseball this year. We just had Cam Schneider on the show from Bullard. They're up there looking at these Max Preps rankings. So I just brought it up just for reference. Something interesting, too, that popped out of my mind. All these teams, even the top teams, 3-3, 5-2. Some of these haven't been updated from yesterday's games. 3-4, that's Buchanan. They're 4-4, actually. Frontier, 6-3. Clovis North, 4-4. Clovis West, 3-3. It's just wild. So they have San Luis Obispo up there as well. Clovis High, Liberty of Bakersfield, the reigning champ, Stockdale, Central, Centennial. The big guns that we're used to. What pops out to you? I mean, we don't know who's going to be the top team.
Because of the weather and the lack of games. I've been, you know, really into the playoff seedings for football and basketball. And for baseball, I'm going to have to take a different approach because I don't know. I think this Max Preps ranking is too early to look at, first of all. The second thing is the reason why I think it's so even is because of how young every team is. And Coach Brad Fonts mentioned this the last hour on your show, how there's a lot of inexperience. Well, I don't say inexperience because we're now 8 games into the year, so they do have some experience. But coming into the year, there was some inexperience and some youth. We just had a major class graduate. Think about all the talent that was lost from the track with this last graduating class. Drew Smith, Nathan Beza, Max Bernal, you know, Kyle Jimenez. I mean, a lot of dudes have graduated, and so it's time for the new guys to step up. And I already saw an example of this past week. Against the Washington Union, I saw Trey Morris take on Tyler Patrick and Mateo Martinez, a young up-and-coming Golden Eagle. He's in his first year on varsity, hits a grand slam for his first varsity home run. You know, I'm thinking about Adam Placencia. Adam Placencia had 2 hits in that game, and I think it's a youth movement going on with Clovis West. They are starting to find some new pieces to replace some of the leaving guys. For Buchanan, same deal. They're having a couple first-time starters in their lineup, and they just beat Liberty in a big win. So I think with the track specifically, you're seeing a lot of youth, and so it's going to be very even as all those teams kind of grow up. I think the oldest, most veteran lineup in the track might just be Centrals because they got a lot back from last year's Division II runner-up. So I do think that the track's going to be very even. I can't tell you right now who's going to be the favorite because Clovis beat Clovis West, but Clovis West has also had some key wins that makes me think that they could still be a contender, and Buchanan's always going to be in the mix, and you can't count out North with Coach Prieto and the great job he does there. You can't count out East because they're always gritty, and they're always kind of a team that comes up on you in track play, and who have I left out? I think I covered everyone in the track there.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Clovis High.
Clovis High. Oh, I mean, do I need to even talk about Clovis? They're, of course, they're like a top 3 team in this section. They have such a great lineup in general, and they're going to be really good now, but they're going to be really good in 2-3 years when Deegan Rose is a veteran guy, when John Casson's a veteran guy, when a lot of those young guys, Logan Georges, who might just be the best freshman pitcher in the Valley, get a good 6-inning, 1-run, 1 earned run, by the way, outing against Clovis West. I mean, they got such a bright future. Of course, they're going to be in the mix, but that's what I'm talking about, right? Logan Georges, only a freshman. You got Caston, who's a young guy. Rose is only a freshman, too. Like, some of their best guys, Leal, I believe he's a junior now. A lot of those guys still have more years to play. So we're going to be able to see track play take shape over the next couple weeks. But just keep in mind that several of these guys will be facing each other in years to come.
Again, looking at the Max Preps rankings, which, hey, it's just a reference right now. A lot of things need to be sorted out. Something, a team that's absent, that's, I think, in my opinion, is a top 5 team, is Kingsburg. Kingsburg, they are 9-1 on the season. What have they done this year? Well, they beat Hanford 12-2. They beat Tulare Western 14-6. They beat Clovis West 2-1. They beat Tulare Western again, shut them out 10-0. And then in the championship of the Coca-Cola Classic, what do? They just beat Clovis, who we just mentioned, 7-2. So in my mind, hey, we can need to throw Kingsburg in there, even though the Max Preps rankings don't have them, which is weird. So, Gabe, you and I are definitely going to be hitting the fields in the next couple of weeks, weather permitting. So we'll be able to see with our own eyeballs some of these teams. And, hey, you and I got to get together. We got to make some 1430 ESPN rankings, and we'll let everybody know out there who some of the top teams are. But, yeah, good job by you. I want to mention, too, Gabe, Clovis North softball. What about these girls? Number 2 in the state by Cal High Sports. They're 7-0. They are locked and loaded. Ryan Maddox is not only one of the top players in the state of California, but she's one of the top players in the nation, head of the University of Arizona. So softball too, Gabe. What do you know about softball this year? I know, you know, Central's got a really good pitcher as well. Clovis, the defending champs, have a really good team as well.
Well, there was an early season test for the Clovis North Broncos when they were put up against the number 24 team in the state, Notre Dame from down south. They beat them 11-1. And so if you're going to have that kind of ease with some of the stiffer tests or what is supposed to be a stiffer test, Clovis North's obviously a top 2 team in the state, and we'll see where they land in the state come May. But the track's going to give them a good challenge. Central has an ace by the name of Mia Nishikawa. Against Royal Grande earlier this season, she had 19 strikeouts. That's 2 less than what Ryan Maddox had last year with 21, but just goes to show that she is maybe one of the most underrated pitchers in the Valley. Someone that doesn't get a lot of attention, but should get the attention. Mia Nishikawa, remember the name. Clovis is also going to be a player in the track. Remember, they're the defending D1 softball champions, so you got to beat them in order to say that you're the best still. And Buchanan. Buchanan's always in the mix. So I do think the track, once again, is the best softball league in the Valley, but you never know what can happen with injuries. You can just, you know, hope if you're a Clovis North fan that injuries doesn't derail this season, because last year it kind of did. I do think, though, because of them falling short last year, the Broncos have a lot to prove.
No, absolutely. And, you know, high-level softball is a lot of fun to watch. You mentioned Clovis, the defending champs. Mike Noel is an incredible coach. And, yeah, I think the central pitcher, I think maybe the people that are listening to the show don't know her name, but believe me, the coaches around the Central Valley know her name. Good job by you, Gabe. Really quick, how busted is your NCAA March Madness bracket?
Oh, funny about that. I got to go, Paul. I got a train to catch.
Yeah, you're producing the show, so you could cut yourself off and cut me off as well. So yeah, I know.
My bracket's on life support, Paul. I do have my Final Four team still alive, but man, I had so many Sweet 16 teams lose. But I did predict Purdue to lose, though, just to Memphis. So I guess I kind of got it right, but I also got it totally wrong because Memphis lost on the last second bucket from Florida Atlantic. Oh my goodness! Again, I got a train to catch.
And that, yeah, absolutely. And then that, yeah, that's why we love March Madness. It's just so much fun, and going home and watching games, watching with your buddies, and watching all the upsets and getting to know these teams is what makes March Madness great. All right, good job by you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you, Paul.
All right, coming up after the break, we'll wrap everything up here on 1430 ESPN.